Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? It's the Locked On NHL Podcast, your Friday edition. Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola, as always. Tom, how's your week going?
You know what? It's been an interesting week, Joe. It's been interesting, and it feels like we're starting to, you know, go into the quiet period of hockey. But even though that is the case, all kinds of stuff keeps popping up. So plenty to talk about. I know we'll get to some stuff. And speaking of hockey, I'm going to be playing hockey tonight. So very much looking forward to that. Still got some game. There were some young guys that came out, some young punks, if you will, that were recent junior players. And old guys like me still mop the floor with them, so that felt good as well. I just want to get that in there. Watch me have a terrible performance tonight, but, you know, I did play well last week, so I just want to make sure everyone knows that.
Man, there's nothing I miss more than playing twice a week, just getting together with the guys, getting out on the ice, playing twice a week. We are still playing a bit, but nothing on a regular schedule. I hope that we'll get back to that soon.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think you're nearly as old as the team I'm about to reference here. But on the team I play with my buddies on Monday nights, there's one team in the league where all the guys are like at least in their upper 40s. They've, I think, been playing together for at least 20 plus years together, and none of them are like all that fast, because none of them are all like, you know, like in terms of like who the best athletes are in this beer league. Like, they're not the cream of the crop, but they've played together so long, and they just, I don't know, they're so well-polished. It's like, it doesn't matter if you skate twice as fast as them, because they're just going to beat you 10-1.
That's unbelievable. I mean, and when guys play together for that long, they know their tendencies, they do set plays. Yeah. And
set plays is really the big thing, I think.
Exactly. And sometimes, and this is what I hate, because my old junior team has a Alberta Men's League team. It's like competitive beer league, basically. And we were in Division One for a long time, and we hated it because we hate back checking, we hate blocking shots, we hate trying. All we want to do is play, do some flybys, big loops, no stops and starts, and then maybe score some nice goals and have a few beers after. But we got stuck in Div One, and then this year our guys complained enough to the league, and they finally relented and said, "Okay, you guys can play in Div Two." So I haven't been able to play because of COVID, and we have these cohort things. So you have like a group of 10 guys that have to play like a cluster of games in a 2-week period. Then you have to bring in the next 10 guys, and those guys that had just played need to take 2 weeks off. It's pretty stringent, so there's no room for subs.
Have you attempted to play in masks, by the way? Have you done it personally?
No. I tried
to do it when some guys rented ice, and I thought it was going to be easier, or I thought I wasn't going to notice it as much as I did.
I tried to work out in a mask a couple times, and it was tricky. It is tough.
Yeah. There's some masks on the market that I've seen, like some athletic apparel companies that, I mean, the masks are like $40, so I haven't got around to trying them, because some of them could be really expensive. That's just for one. But there are some that are out there that are designed for like working out or playing sports, and I haven't got around to trying those yet, but maybe I should give them a shot.
Well, were you in Ohio today?
Yes.
What was going on there?
We didn't, it was tough. We really didn't. So we picked up a puppy today, there. So we really only went to the one house where we were picking him up, and that was it. Like, we didn't, even when we stopped, like, we were in Pennsylvania. So, which is basically the same as what New York is right now, where everything's pretty stringent. Yeah. So I'm not really sure what Ohio was like, just because we only had the experience with the one person that we were interacting with. But I think I've read they're not taking it as seriously as some of the other states. That's so inconsistent in the United States. That's why they've had some insane numbers here with coronavirus. We've got a lot to get to today on the episode. There's been a lot that's been happening off the ice. We're still months away. The AHL announced, or at least their CEO said this past week, that they're targeting a return date of February 5th. Which would mean that American Hockey League teams will go about 11 months without playing a game. And it's probably going to be near the same for the 7 NHL teams that did not make the postseason tournament that have not played since early March. So if the AHL is returning on February 5th, you would think it'd be right around there. That the AHL CEO did say that he thinks that the NHL is targeting a return sometime in mid-January. So we do have time. We do still do have a lot of time until we probably are seeing hockey again. There's some free agents on the market that I want to talk about. We got some uniform stuff in the league that we should talk about today. But let's start with a non-NHL topic. In the Ontario Hockey League, the OHL, the big news in hockey on Friday was the OHL announced that they are not going to have physical contact. They're not going to have body checking in the 2021 season. Lisa McLeod, Ontario's Minister of Sport, said the decision was taken out of purposeful physical contact that is necessary to limit the spread of the coronavirus. So they're taking out body checking, and I don't know. I don't think it's going to look much like hockey without it.
This was something, Joe, that kind of popped up. We heard rumblings about it, I think about a month ago, that, you know, the OHL and Ontario, the province, and the health minister and all that were trying to sort something out to get hockey back in action in terms of OHL and major junior hockey. And there were some rumblings that this might come to fruition. And then today, Lisa McLeod did indeed say that if the OHL is to return as it's planning to do in February, she said absolutely no body contact. And on October 30th, that is a bizarre time to declare to the OHL that it cannot have body contact. There are still months to go before we get to that point. Lots can happen in that time in terms of public health. And it's just outright bizarre, considering that the QMJHL, which has started and then has at times had to stop and postpone due to COVID outbreaks, has not had to cut out body checking. It has eliminated fighting, and that was part of a deal there, but fighting is different from body contact. And then the WHL is looking to get going in January, and there's nothing like this being even proposed whatsoever. Joe, it's ridiculous. It's a head scratcher. And so you're trying to tell me that you're going to eliminate body contact, hitting, checking, whatever you want to call it, and you're going to make the game safer? How are you going to make the game safer and save people from COVID exposure potentially by eliminating body contact? Joe, what about face-offs? What about scrums in the corner? What about getting dressed in the locker room? What about being on the bench with those people in close quarters? What about scrums and skirmishes in front of the net? You're telling me no body contact is the solution? Outright ridiculous. And what it's going to do is it's going to affect the level of play. It's going to completely skew and mess up with these players, scouting systems. All of that will be messed up, because how do you gauge a player in his true tenacity and the true way he plays if basically what you're watching is a glorified pickup game? It's pathetic. Mm-hmm. It is so stupid. I understand the desire to look out for public health. I am not against that whatsoever. But eliminating body contact from hockey will do nothing in regard to making it safer.
That's why, to me, it almost seems like a strict like a PR move or what, because I don't understand how someone can look at taking body checking out of the sport and thinking that that reduces the risk of spreading the coronavirus. Because if I'm a defenseman in the OHL and there's a forward coming down the wall into my offensive zone, into my defensive zone with the puck, and I'm even if I'm not allowed to check him, I'm still skating towards him trying to get the puck off of his stick. I am still in the vicinity of where that player is. Yeah. So, like, to me, like, there's no social distancing going on. You're not putting masks on these players. So to take body checking out, I don't really know what I'm eliminating in terms of spreading the coronavirus. And that's why, to me, it just kind of seems like a public relations move.
And there has been some speculation that this might be the province of Ontario trying to get the OHL just to not play at all. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know. I would think that they're smarter than that. It just, you look at it and you just scratch your head and go, okay, if you really want to make it safe, then maybe implement that all OHL players for this year have to wear a full face shield or cage, but it has to have, and I know there's a couple of companies, I think Bauer was one of them, maybe even Oakley was working on something. I know it's in football, but there was like a piece to attach to your visor or bubble that goes kind of over your bottom half of your your face protection to prevent like splatter of saliva and all of that. So it's basically a mask within the mask without having a face covering literally right over your mouth. And so if you don't want droplets, maybe that's the solution. Get the league to agree to implement that, but not eliminate body contact and then completely skew the integrity of the game. And what you could be doing is absolutely messing up these kids and their potential draft stock. It just, this is not the right answer to getting this done right.
I think we're in agreement on this. I think most people are in agreement on this, that it's just basically dumb. Yeah. So hopefully something changes, but I'm not so confident that that's going to be the case. Let's move on to another off the ice story that happened this week in the National Hockey League and also at the collegiate level. The Arizona Coyotes renounced the draft rights to their fourth round pick from last month's draft, Mitchell Miller, after the big story came out about his past admitting to some pretty heinous and disgusting bullying that he did towards a African-American classmate of his with disabilities. And like, I know he was young, and what was he, 14 maybe, when this had happened. So like, there's a part of me that says like, he's a kid, and you know, you don't want to be punishing adults for what they did in their childhood, but given the nature of what the acts are and the fact that he still is a kid being 18 years old and just being drafted by the Coyotes, I don't really know how to feel about it, but I think that this all could have been avoided if the Coyotes had just, you know, had done their due diligence in the first place, known the details they needed to know, which seemed to have been out there.
Yep.
And then if they don't draft him, this never becomes a huge issue.
This is a lesson. Actions have consequences. The no bullying thing and ending bullying is not a new concept. It is something that has really, you know, gained a lot of momentum in the last couple of years. And this is a perfect example of something that you do even as a 14-year-old. If it's that disturbing, disgusting, and especially degrading towards another human being, it does have consequences. And I think that kids that are hot dogging it at 13, 14, 15 years of age and doing some stupid stuff. And listen, Joe, we've all been guilty of doing stupid things. I've never done anything like that to some kid when I was in junior high or high school. I always went by the code of you treat people the way you want to be treated. But I saw some stupid stuff that was pretty bad back in the day. And you think back on it and you go, wow, that was terrible. And this is a lesson for the kids out there and for adults too, that should be able to teach their kids a lesson from this, to say that's not how you act. This is not what you do. And if you do act that way and you do stuff like that, it will cost you. It doesn't just go away. And this is a perfect example of that.
So what do you think happens from here? I mean, it's a tough question. I mean, it's almost a stupid question because there's probably no way of knowing, but his rights are renounced by the Coyotes. University of North Dakota's president, Andrew Armacost, said today on that being Friday, that they have removed Miller from the team at the University of North Dakota. He did say that he, at the moment, is remaining a student, and we'll see if that changes if someone else wants to give him an opportunity to play hockey. But I wonder, like, is this just, he's a fourth round pick prospect. Maybe he probably, the odds are, was probably not going to ever be an NHL player. But just in terms of like, hey, does the guy even get a scholarship to like go get a college education somewhere by playing hockey? Like, I wonder if that is just now shot for him even.
It might be. I truly can't tell by, you know, looking in my crystal ball or anything like that, but this is, it's going to be and I know that he sent out letters to teams prior to the draft saying he did do this, and he was caught, and he did apologize and this and that. And I know he made it aware to the teams around the league that this did occur. But Joe, I don't know. Like, I feel like the instinct of hockey teams, organizations, clubs, collegiate level, professional level, semi-pro, might not take a chance on him. Just given the PR that comes with it and the negative PR that it does bring with it. So it's a tough situation. It's a career dash before it even got started. But again, actions have consequences.
You know, day by day, there are several walls that you've got to get through. And for me, that's, you know, getting ready for a show, or getting up and having enough energy to do a workout, or you got something around to do housewise. Built Go is really what you want. Whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Go every day. Easy to take in 1.5-ounce packages, put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever, your golf bag to power through the back nine, or put it in your pocket to get through the day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. I am somebody that drinks no sugar energy drinks all the time. I was drinking two a day. Don't Google what those things do to you. those sugarless energy drinks. I'm on to Built Go now. Three delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, chocolate mint. Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into my system fast, plus it's easy on the stomach. Built Go is loaded with good stuff to ignite my work. Visit BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola here on the Locked On NHL podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at SneakyJoeWGR. Tom is there at Tom Gazzola. Let's get into a couple of NHL topics. We'll start with the ongoing free agency period, which has definitely slowed down. You had a couple of signings in the last week. Alex Galchenyuk signing a one-year deal with the Ottawa Senators. You're usually around signings like that, a little bit more minor at this point in time. There are some decently big names still, though, on the market. I'm looking specifically at Mike Hoffman, probably is the top free agent. Mikael Granlund is another guy that I have made note that is still available. Anthony Duclair. You've got some lesser guys, like even like Ilya Kovalchuk, if he still wants to play. Andreas Anthonisiou, I don't think I've seen with a contract. Eric Halla. Like, there are some guys on the market. And yep, of all those names I just ran down, would Hoffman have to be the most interesting or the most appealing if a team is still looking to for a final boost to their team?
Joe, he's a 60-point guy, or 59 points last season, was going to be a 60-point guy had the season, you know, not ended abruptly. But he's not going to get the type of money that he was making last year. He was close to $6 million or 5.5, yep, around there. And he's going to have to take a haircut. I don't think there's a ton of money to be thrown around right now. And it's incredible, because we're seeing some legitimate, bona fide National Hockey League players that can put up really respectable numbers for a team. And in this case, when it comes to Hoffman, good numbers, elite level numbers and scoring, that are jobless right now. So he's going to end up taking a haircut big time, probably get a one-year deal somewhere. Anthony Duclair went into this whole situation quite differently than most. He did not have any representation. He represented himself. That has not worked out well for him. If I was in his shoes, I don't know, you know, the negotiation game or anything like that, but if I felt like I was put into that position where I thought I could negotiate myself, I would have tried to get anything done as soon as possible at the open of free agency, just to ensure that I had a deal and I was going to be in the NHL next season to continue to build off of a very strong season with a pretty bad Ottawa Senators team. And that hasn't panned out. You're right. I think you listed off a bunch of good names, and I think these guys will end up back in the league next season. They should, at least. But I feel like we're going to see a lot of PTOs, Joe. That's what this is building up towards.
Yeah, which is crazy, especially like some of these names are younger guys. One guy that the Sabres let go, for instance, that was a restricted free agent, Dominic Cahoon. Like, he doesn't have to be, you know, no one has to be banging down the door for Dominic Cahoon, but a 24-year-old forward who had 31 points in 56 games, it's not all that shabby for him to not even be on a team right now. And maybe he's headed towards something similar. Like, that to me says a lot about the market. Yep. When even those middle tier guys are having a lot of issues even getting anything around the league. And the middle class of free agency, this is kind of the middle class of free agency, this group that is still left out there. I'll throw Carl Soderberg, Derek Brassard, both of them were 30 plus point players last season. Again, that's not a lot to write home about, but when you look at free agency, that was a middle of the pack free agent. Yep. And for all of these guys to still be out there, I think teams are just the flat cap and still questions about the season and maybe getting stuck in some situations where maybe they would have hoped they would be able to trade a guy, but again, the flat cap affecting that. And then, you know, you have teams with internal salary caps. There's just a lot. There's a lot there. And then real quick, I want to ask you about Andreas Anthonisiou specifically.
Sure.
Considering you're in Edmonton and he was with the Oilers at the end of last season. He was a name that I thought of for like a second at the beginning of free agency as an interesting name for the Sabres. They have made moves at forward, so that went away pretty quickly. But like, he's another one of those guys. Like, I'm surprised that a 25-year-old guy with, you would think, some promise can't even get a gig anywhere.
He had a 30-goal season a year ago, and there was a lot of hype around this guy, and he had obviously a bad year, again, on another bad team in Detroit. And when the Oilers traded for him and gave up 2 second-rounders and they walked away from him, people around Edmonton were furious with Ken Holland, furious that that was the end result. But at the end of the day, the Oilers decided that they would just cut bait and say, you know what, for that price point and where we're at with the frozen and flat cap, it's not worth it. He had 2 points in 9 regular season games with the Oilers, and despite all the hype, there wasn't a lot of flash and panache there. It was a lot of, really, this guy scored 30 last year? And he was a little bit dinged up at times, and people gave him the benefit of the doubt. And then he came back in the postseason, and he had one good game, let's call it, Joe, where he basically had 3 or 4 power forward rushes to the net with the puck. And I think it resulted in 1 or 2 shots, no goals. And people were like, there's Andreas Athanasiou. And then he was a ghost for the next couple of games. And really, the end result was more nothing. So this guy, that 30-goal season, a lot of the rhetoric now in regard to Athanasiou is that 30-goal season was the anomaly, not the 16 points that – or pardon me, the 26 points that he put up this past season, or the 33 that he put up 2 seasons ago. The anomaly was the 30-goal season, and that's kind of the knock on him right now, and that's why the Oilers walked away from him.
Yep. Interesting. And then one other quick free agent topic that we'll just spend a minute on before I got a jersey thing that we got to get to.
Oh, yeah.
That happened in the league this week. Goaltending is barren with what's left. I'm not sure how many teams are even left looking for a netminder, if any at all. But there's only 5 goalies unsigned right now that played in the NHL last season, that played even one game. One of those is a guy who played one game, by the way, in Garrett Sparks. And then the other 4 are Ryan Miller, who's available, Jimmy Howard, Craig Anderson, and Corey Schneider, all 30-plus-year-old veterans. And I don't know, maybe all of them find themselves not playing in the league this year. I know Miller specifically has said, he told, I think, Pierre LeBrun of TSN or The Athletic a couple of weeks back that he does still want to play this year. So that's at least one of those guys that still has a commitment to play. I would expect Jimmy Howard still would think he has some left in the tank. These other guys haven't announced retirements or anything. But I wonder if just none of them are even signed with the team just because, again, I don't know who their dancing partner is.
Right. I mean, we saw Michael Hutchinson re-sign with Toronto. So yeah. If teams are going towards Michael Hutchinson instead of Corey Schneider, Craig Anderson, Jimmy Howard, or Ryan Miller, then that might be a sign that their time's up. So I mean, out of that group, Craig Anderson is the one that I look at and go, you know what? You might still get some decent games out of Craig Anderson, even at 39. Ryan Miller, I don't know. You know, yeah. I feel like Corey Schneider's career has, it's been a struggle the last few years. Jimmy Howard might be okay, but it's not a really promising group where you look at that and go, yeah, that guy's going to really put us over the top. These guys are probably looking at potential backup roles if there are any. You know where they might get signed, Joe, is if guys get hurt. If guys go down and guys get hurt, they're telling these guys to be ready because they'll be the next call. I think that's likely the scenario there.
That's a good thought. And Chicago was the first team, by the way, I thought of, but because they have Colin Delia and Malcolm Subban, but it sounds like that's what they're doing. Like, just going to go forward with those two.
Good luck.
Yeah, that's probably not going to go well. I'd be stunned if it did.
No.
And then another NHL topic, which we'll wrap here on the podcast today. The Dallas Stars third jerseys announced this week. Black with neon green all over the place, including the Dallas Stars logo, but then it is surrounded in the background by an outline of the state of Texas. I really feel these are jerseys where you either love them or hate them, and there are very few in the middle. And I feel like we could have a big disagreement here, but I'll ask you first, where do you stand on these neon green and black Dallas Stars alternate uniforms?
Yeah, I mean, I saw them when they announced them, and I'm like, what the hell is that? But, I mean, it makes sense. Like, the skyline in Dallas, they have the green lights and stuff like that. I get it. I get that aspect of it. The jersey itself, there's not much to it. It's pretty simple. It's the neon green that pops that really catches your eye. And I'll give them credit for doing something different and thinking outside of the box. And that's where, you know, I go, all right, I understand that point of it. Mm-hmm. It's not all that different from like the San Jose Sharks black uniforms with teal trim, except, you know, we're talking about neon green here, the striping and all of that, the logo. It unfortunately harkens back to what I call a uniform designed by a 5-year-old in the Oilers third jersey. It's that bad and that simple that, you know, a kid in kindergarten could have designed it. And I think that's sort of the case here for the Stars. It's just, it's the contrast in colors with the neon green that really pops and gives it a leg up on the Oilers blue third jersey that I think is a piece of trash.
Now, I am someone that likes the bright colors and the bright uniforms and teams that will try something different. Like, even teams that try something different and I don't like the uniforms, I'll rarely bash them because, like, all right, at least you gave it a shot.
Yeah.
And with these ones, I like the bright and I like that they're kind of simple. I like that they're clean. Like, sometimes I feel like you could overdo it and, you know, like they could look too busy. They actually remind me of, I don't know if you remember this, but the All-Star jerseys from 2015, so 5 years ago. They're hard to remember because they kind of all just blend together. It's a mishmash.
I remember it was in Columbus. Yeah. I had to cover that one.
Yeah. Now, those uniforms reminded me of them, but I looked back and I looked them up. And if you look at the comparison, like, I think a reason I like the Stars ones better is those NHL All-Star jerseys were like filled with like, there's great piping all over the place and you've got like white stripes and like, it was just way too much going on. Yeah. And it's like, all right, Stars, you know what? If you were going to do it, just thank you for making it simple and not going nuts. So I personally like that part. I don't think you have to. I mentioned they're probably very, very polarizing in terms of uniforms. Have you seen any of these reverse retro uniforms, by the way?
I'm glad you brought that up because I like the reverse retro. I think that's a really neat concept. That's one where I go, oh, okay, good job, NHL. Yeah. Like, that's neat. And then I will say the Oilers reverse retro, I've gotten a ton of information on it.
Okay.
I'm very much looking forward to seeing it. It's basically their uniforms that they have right now, but orange in the shoulders with blue trim. I'm hearing that there might be orange on the inside of the logo with a white drop and then blue lettering and a blue outline. So to me, that's pretty neat. I like that it harkens back to when the Oilers first were born into the WHA. They actually had kind of that motif, but this is a bit of an updated style look compared to the original WHA Oilers uniform. So I kind of like that. I think it, you know, could quite likely replace the Oilers' current alternate uniform, but it sounds like they'll have four uniforms whenever this season gets going.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say in this is I cannot wait for the Washington Capitals reverse retros, which I saw floated today that they will be released next week, or maybe in the next couple of weeks. And I saw reference to them bringing back the Screaming Eagle, and you know, it depends. I think it depends where you, when you grew up, because like when I grew up, the Washington Capitals were those blue uniforms. It's Peter Bondra with that Screaming Eagle,
yep.
Or it's also Jager, by the way, who like, that's my first memory of Jaromir Jagr, is him in a Capitals uniform with the black jersey and the Capitol building. I don't like those as much. I like the Screaming Eagle ones better, but it seems like they're bringing those back as an alternate. I'm pumped for that. And I hope that that happens. So I think, again, like the concept is awesome.
Yeah. And those were cool. Those were actually cool. I didn't like, you're right, the third jersey that ended up becoming the home jersey with the Capitol building.
Yeah.
I remember the days of Michael Pavonka, Dale Hunter, Pavonka. Like guys like that with the caps too. So yeah. Adam Oates for a little while and Gotchar, yada, yada. A guy could go on and on about those old Caps teams.
Yeah.
But there was another one that I really thought was cleverly done is Vegas, and they're nod back to the Las Vegas Thunder of the IHL.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a nice touch as well. So pretty neat there how teams had to get creative, because not all the teams have a lot of jerseys to go back on.
Right. Yeah, I like they did that too. All right, well, we'll see if we got any more Verse Retro jerseys in the next couple of weeks. We will. I'll be back with you on the Locked On NHL podcast on Tuesday with my co-host on Tuesdays, Mike DiStefano. But until then, thanks everybody for listening. Again, be sure to check us out on social media. Tom's on Twitter at Tom Gazzola. I'm there at SneakyJoeWGR. This has been the Locked On NHL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.